Columbia presents Corwin. Tonight, the long name none could spell. A tribute to our Czechoslovak ally. Written, directed, and produced by Norman Corwin for CBS. And starring Martin Gable as narrator. With William L. Shirer and a musical score by Lynn Murray. The long name none could spell.
This is William L. Shirer. 5 years ago this night, the German armies marched into what was left of a betrayed and ravaged Czechoslovakia, and the last remaining island of democracy in Central Europe was engulfed. I saw that betrayal, that ravaging of a brave, democratic land. But tonight, this program is concerned mostly with these last 5 years and of a day yet to come.
Do we now in this safe corner, being the region of New York 22, New York, gathered to italicize the long name none could spell, the word attached to no particular earth, the label under the porcelain dish, the hallmark on the bauble in the bargain basement. Remember when we said,
the name's never spoken, it sneezed.
That always got a laugh here, gentlemen. Remember the foreign-sounding polysyllable? C-Z-E-K, Zeko, Czechoslovakia, or something. Where is it, anyway?
Balkans, isn't it?
No, it's Asia, I think. They speak Slavic, sort of a Russian dialect.
Well, wherever it is, it's probably got bad plumbing.
Yeah, let's see now. C-H-Z... Is this the name we know so well tonight? The name so easily rippled through your radio receiving set? Is this the same name? Czechoslovakia. Sirs, ladies, listeners, congressmen, white colors, dirty colors, corporations, gold star mothers, wounded men, soldiers in barracks and on furlough, stand back. Make room. Into our midst now, bring what was dismembered on the bright green table. Wheel it down the center air lane and poise it in the middle of your mind. See this shroud with the long name, this linen signed and sealed and dated Munich by the hands of friends. Under this shroud, this apparition in the living room, the carving knives are laid at rest beside the carving. Not much is left, they say. It was agreed the head be surgered and delivered to the killer of the Jews. Also the heart plucked out and laid upon his hand. And then the viscera, and that was all.
Accept, sir, renewed assurances of high consideration.
The speech of diplomats. Ah, how far removed from blood.
His Majesty wishes me to acknowledge the receipt of your note of the 10th of September and to assure you that his government has no intention of interfering with the integrity.
You remember where you were the day that Hitler spoke at Nuremberg? Not so long ago, except that if you have a child younger than 5 years and 6 months, it was before his time. It was on a fine late summer afternoon, toward the end of the baseball season. And the trees were green in Indiana. And the fishing was fine in the Gulf of Mexico. And it was good flying weather. And the Yankees were winning again. And in the studio, the announcer, reading from a slip of paper, said,
"We interrupt our program in order to bring our listeners the world-awaited talk on Germany's foreign policy delivered by Adolf Hitler to the Nazi Congress at Nuremberg. Throughout the address, an interpreter will interrupt to paraphrase the Chancellor's remarks. We take you now to Nuremberg, Germany."
And you were taken to Nuremberg, Germany. And the man with the glandular ailment told his people,
"Der Gedanke ist für uns unerträglich, dass ein großer Teil unseres Volkes den Drohungen vom demokratischen Orden ausgesetzt sei. Ich verweise auf die Tschechoslowakei."
Sicherheit!
Chancellor has just said, "For us, it is intolerable at this moment to think of a large part of our people exposed to the democratic hordes who threaten our people. I refer to Czechoslovakia."
And they cheered him, and the party loved it, and a good time was had by all. And in the capitals, concern and much disturbance. On the short wave, crackles of opinion and reportage from London.
London, like the rest of Europe, has been under the shadow of Nuremberg. However, once again, the British have demonstrated their ability to fly into a great calm at a time of crisis. The feeling is widespread in Britain that the British government will urge Czechoslovakia to do anything short of actually dismembering the country to prevent war.
And from the Reich Center, Berlin, correspondent Whiteleather.
It's just after midnight here in Berlin. Judging from the filled beer halls, I feel safe in saying that millions of Germans are still discussing anxiously what Hitler's next move will be.
And Shirer on the air from Prague.
Millions of Czechoslovakians sat at their radios tonight and listened to Hitler. I roamed around Prague's old streets all day, trying to see how a people reacts with war and possible invasion staring them in the face. I couldn't find any evidence at all that they were scared.
Neither were they scared in Paris, France.
When Frenchmen here in Paris heard what he said about Czechoslovakia's alleged brutality to the Sudeten German minority, and about the conspiracy of the democracies versus Germany, they smiled. What interests Frenchmen is that though it was a menacing speech, it was not precise.
The Prime Minister called statesmen to Downing Street to study the crisis. While in the town of Lidice, a young couple got married. And the farmers of East Anglia tended their fields of rye and marrow. And the cafes of Oslo were gay. And the shopkeepers of Rotterdam closed their shops and said, "Well, that's another." And the foundries of Magnitogorsk worked through the afternoon and evening of that day. And the self-satisfied fascisti drank wine on the shores of Tripoli.
London. Here is a bulletin just received. British Prime Minister Chamberlain will fly to Germany tomorrow to have a personal interview with Adolf Hitler in a final effort to head off a European war. This was officially announced by the British government a few minutes ago.
This is Prague. News of Mr. Chamberlain's flight has been received in the Czechoslovakian capital with apprehension. Czech sources express the fear that their government might be called upon to make some new and drastic concession as a result of the historic meeting of the Prime Minister and the leader of Germany.
And in the great concert hall on West 57th Street, the gold cufflink of the conductor swept in a mild arc, and the bowing hands of the string sections gleamed, and Bohemia was in each ear and bouncing off the walls and backboards. Outside the hall, the buses grunted into gear, and subway trains beneath departed for another borough. And out beyond the rooftops lay the sea, with wakeful fish astir among the mindless waters. And eastward through the aging night, whispers of music beyond the living ear, and atmospheric signs, presentiments, and memoranda of bygone wars, co-traveling on the winds. And east by eastward, in a corner of sweet earth, by the woods near a park in the city, the maker of the music slept, having gone home. Having gone home to the land of his birth. For checks, too, are born. And checks have homes. And checks are singers also of important songs. And the then unpopular statesman without portfolio by name Churchill spoke out against the trend.
Do not suppose that this is the end. It is only the beginning. It is only the first foretaste of the bitter cup which will be proffered to you year after year, unless by a supreme recovery of moral health and martial vigor, we rise again and take our stand for freedom as in olden times.
And the tourists bought postcards in Estes Park, the Rocky Mountains taking the whole thing casually. And Kate Smith was in her usual good voice. And the loyalists kept on in Spain against the Nazis and the Blackshirts, the Moors and Falangists. And the dead of China turned but slightly in their graves. Whereas in London, 2 days later, one Jan Masaryk, his father Thomas dead and out of reach now, but the son speaking, tired, to a microphone at 4 a.m.
My country has not been perfect always. We have made mistakes. We are young and inexperienced, but we are proud to be a democracy, where a mistake can be acknowledged and where it can be rectified. But please know this. Our German minority was treated better than any other in Europe. And if it would not have been for the shocking propaganda from across the border, we and our Sudeten Germans would have settled our differences with dignity and without bloodshed.
Then they met again with maps, the umbrella having been checked in the cloakroom, and Monsieur Daladier being on hand to break a treaty or two. And oh, it was fall in the woods of Maine, and the leaves were beginning to burn. And eastward 5,000 miles, the city of Athens stood contented in its old age, while northward sweet-tempered Danes let their cows in from pasture. And things looked very good for Harvard's football season. And Kiska lay unnoticed in a misty low of the Aleutians. And Harry Hopkins' son had just turned 13. And Sagittarius the Archer put his bow away and started down the heavens.
Agreement reached September 29th, 1938, among Germany, United Kingdom, France, and Italy. Firstly, the evacuation will begin on October 1st.
Secondly, the evacuation shall be completed by October 10th without any existing installations having been destroyed, and the Czechoslovakian government be held responsible for carrying out the evacuation without damage to said installations.
Fourthly, the occupation by German troops will begin on October 1st.
Eighthly, when the question of Polish and Hungarian minorities in Czechoslovakia has been settled, Germany and Italy, for their part, will give a guarantee to Czechoslovakia. Dated Munich.
Peace in our time. The Poles, not yet in exile, helped themselves to a slice off the top, and Hungary hacked at the bottom. And since Hitler had set the style by marching into Czechoslovakia at exactly 14 o'clock one afternoon, the troops of Poland in full panoply rattled across the Olsa Bridge into the Czech town of Teschen exactly at 14 o'clock the next afternoon. And the Czechs of Teschen looked on as the Czechs of the Sudeten looked on, helplessly. And over the festering air of Middle Europa came the voice of Marshal Smigli-Ridge to his soldiers.
The Majesty of the Polish Republic crosses the Olsa on your bayonets. March on!
And in the Kremlin, none of this sat well. And the press of Moscow had a word for it.
Today, Poland flatters Hitler by imitation. But let Warsaw beware. Tomorrow, he will seize not only the Polish corridor, but Poland itself.
Meanwhile, between Chicago and New York, on well-kept grass and infields, the Yankees beat the Cubs 4 straight. During which encounter, the scrap reserves piled up a little higher in the yards of Nagasaki. And James, son of Ring Lardner, a humorist, was dead in behalf of the Lincoln Brigade, in behalf of the people of Spain. And Shira went on the air from Prague.
After Hungary has obtained its share of the booty, Prague estimates it will have left about one-third of its territory, almost a third of its population. Czechoslovak industry has been completely disrupted, much of it lost. Communications have been hopelessly crippled. The highly developed porcelain, glass, chemical, paper, toy, and musical instrument industries have passed lightly to Germany. Nearly half of the coal mines went with them, and about one-third of the sugar industry.
In this casket, then, beneath the shroud, is the memento of a murder. Stand back! Uncover the remains. What thing is this? What dim and bloodied shape? Where are the leavings? Do we make out a hopeful glint of steel? Can it be the carving knives agglomerated to a dagger? Excalibur? A spirit sword? Whose hand upholds it, Czech or German? Oh, wait. Who cautions so for silence, motions and makes as though to speak?
We were not theirs to give away who gave us away. Nor are we theirs to whom we have been given. We are the men of the Republic. We and our women are the long name, and the fertile ground, and the old square, and the dancing, and the blue-eyed children, and the rest of it. We are the sword, and the hand is ours, and the blood is us. It has been told how they treated the students. It is known what they did to the girls. It has been verified that they killed the family in Prague and sought out the married daughter in Deniek and hanged her, though she was 6 months pregnant. You have heard in the broadcast in the cool of the evening how they shot every tenth worker in the factory. You have read in the morning paper concerning the annihilation of the village. You know this then. But what a chemist in the bone to live it through and breathe the air of it. And how we passed this very night. Oh, that, oh, friends and allies, you shall never know. We and our women are the long name everyone can spell. The label under the train wreck on the line to Belgrade. The pinprick in the ear of the infected cattle requisitioned by the enemy. The writing on the wall left standing when the power plant blew up. We are the ho-hum slowdown, costlier than bombs. And the freight car shunted in the wrong direction, sending farm machinery instead of ammunition to the Eastern Front. We are the dream-strong people in the nightmares of the conqueror. Go ask the conqueror. Go ask the worms who have made contact with the Obergruppenführer Heydrich how it goes with the protectors of the Reich Protectorate. Allies, the betrayal's all forgot and paid for in the conscience. The bartered peace has since been renegotiated by the millions who shall walk no more. Come with your guns, allies, and with your fresh young armies, sunder the chain whose links we file down with our naked teeth. Hand us the weapon, steelier than the spirit sword, which we uphold against the great day of your coming.
Shall a broadcast on the radio impersonate the red jellies of the broken body? Or meter the convulsive quiver of the man who wouldn't talk? Who wouldn't talk? Who wouldn't talk? Shall a Tuesday evening voice smell of scorched skin? Or weigh the scum that gathers in the stagnant blood? And what if 47 cadences aspire to symbolize a nation? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with symbols? So is a flag a symbol? And the headstone where the hero of the people fell. The kiss of your beloved is a symbol. And a flower. And the striking of a clock. And a swastika. What is it we are here to honor on a program of this sort? A long name? A flag? An anniversary? Some people? Yeah. Some people.
People!
The unstatistic people bearing thoughts and children. People rising to the cursed day, working the cursed slave shift, sleeping the spongy sleep of those who soak up hatred every waking minute. Who are these people? Are they faceless? Have they long names, short names, any names at all? Are they listed? Are they quick or dead? Listen, we know about them, and we have them down, for they and their deeds have gone abroad, beyond the fence, beyond the barbs of wire and the bayonets, and here is to them, here is to them by their name and trade and their transaction with the enemy. Count them off. Charles Yellen, iron worker of Kladno, who listened but lately to the Allied broadcasts and informed his workmates of their content. Honor to your unforgotten bones, Charles Yellen.
Alois and Ferdinand Valeshek.
To Alois Valeshek, innkeeper of Trebenica,
and his brother Ferdinand, who persistently collected arms and hid them. The praise of allies east and westward of your graves, O brothers Balashek.
Ludwig
Svoboda, leader of the Czechoslovak unit in the Red Army, and to your men who held their ground at Stalingrad, the clasped hand and the resolution of comrades at your side. Jan Smudek of the underground of Domaslice, captured but escaped and still alive and killing for the cause. Good dynamiting to you, Smudek.
Charles Liner.
To Charles Liner, manufacturer of Prague, who listened to the speech of Benish on the London Wireless and spread the news among employees of his company. The dividend of freedom coming soon.
Carol Kuttelwascher.
To Flight Lieutenant Kuttelwascher, flying with the RAF, the ribbons of the peoples of the United Nations, on your DFC and bar.
Bohumir Kokta.
To Bohumir Kokta, doctor of law who burned the harvest.
Francis Dvorak.
To Francis Dvorak, policeman who printed the pamphlets.
Charles Sturm.
To Charles Sturm, shoemaker who carried a loaded pistol.
Erwin Engelsrode.
To Erwin Engelsrode, buyer who hid supplies of oil and glycerin.
Hugo Vojita.
To Hugo Vojita, general who smuggled patriots into the Czech Legion abroad.
Thousands of others.
To the thousands. Thousands like them who stood in the barracks yards in the hour of dawn to die for their country. This pledge, from allies in the month of March in the year of the turning. There will be a cool morning soonest. There will be a cool morning when the bells ring in the city and the men and women carry their children down to the square of St. Wenceslas. And there will be bells in the morning of Moravska Ostrava and the sound of them crossing the farms and villages of Olomouc and up by the wooded hills of Hradec Kralovy and over the stream through the pasture just below the fork of Kladno and winding through the windy passes of Bratislava and floating in the blue sky over the lake. There will be the cool morning soonest. And some will take their lunches with them, and there will be the flag snapping, and the bells of the great teen church will jubilate. And on the high, avenging scaffold by the monument, the fascist uniforms bemedaled will appear for the last time before the people, and at the given signal, they will hang who did the hanging. And free men and women will begin the taking over once again, and the long name shall be spelled and lighted in the hard ways of the world. You have been listening to Columbia's presentation of The Long Name None Could Spell, written, directed, and produced by Norman Corwin, with an original score composed and conducted by Lynn Murray, starring Martin Gable as narrator and Michael Ingram. William L. Shira appeared as himself. President Eduard Benish of Czechoslovakia, who was originally scheduled to appear on this program, was at the last minute unable to do the show because of pressing matters of state. For listeners interested in obtaining a script of the program you have just heard, The Long Name None Could Spell appears in substantially the same version in the new book entitled More by Corwin, just off the press. Next week at this time, Columbia presents Corwin's production of the world premiere of The Lonesome Train, a new radio cantata by Earl Robinson, composer of The Ballad for Americans and Corporal Millard Lampell.
Lynn Murray will conduct. Harry Marble speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.